Okay, the first thing I want to tell you is I always begin by saying the more I get to know Washington, D.C., the more I'm very happy to be in Kentucky. It is a fun and interesting place, so I'm really glad to be here. And first of all, let me recognize my colleagues who are coming up. Hopefully, I'll give you some juicy tidbits. And I really came here today to talk a little bit higher up in the discussion. Because I think that's where the conversation belongs. I think we are getting into the weeds of facts and fiction, and I really would like to pull the conversation up and talk a little bit more interestingly about big picture issues, because I really wanted to talk to you about what I honestly believe, and Gordon mentioned this, is really the most significant piece of legislation anywhere that protects public health. And that is the Clean Air Act. I do not think you will find a more successful statute anywhere, and I think that we have plenty of evidence to support that. You know, over the past 41 years since EPA came to be and the first Clean Air Act was passed, every dollar we spend to protect public health under the Clean Air Act, we get $30 in direct public health benefits. Now, that is an investment ratio that anybody can really embrace. And what we've been able to successfully reduce criteria pollutants by 60%, while the GDP grew well over 200% during the same time period, as well as jobs. And so it's very difficult for me in Washington to be facing the criticism that EPA has run amok, that we are killing jobs, and we are slowing down the economy. It is simply factually not correct. In 40 years of history, EPA has never threatened energy reliability. We have never shut down the ability of agriculture to grow healthy food to feed people who need to be fed in this country. We have never dropped trays on the floor during speeches. I'm sorry, I couldn't resist. But you know, right now when I go to hearings, I basically think that the dialogue is so much more of what have you done for the economy lately? How many jobs have you grown? And if you can't articulate it, then you're a failure. Now, I recognize probably more than most the need to actually focus on job growth, the need to focus on the economy. But I will tell you, the job of EPA is public health protection. We must do it in a way that doesn't slow the economy, that allows it to grow, but we need to do it in a way where our number isn't about how many jobs we created. Our goal is how many lives did we save. That's a darn good goal, right? It's about the Clean Air Act being able to prevent thousands, hundreds of thousands of asthma attacks, protecting hundreds of thousands of lives every year. And it's about millions of kids who can go to school every day, all those days when they can go to school and their parents can go to work. It's about not having workers lose work days so because they're home with either sick children or because they themselves can't deal with the pollution that's in the air. It's about preventing hospital visits. That's a much more interesting conversation than how do we deal with the costs associated with those hospital visits. At least in my world, it's a more interesting conversation. So I came here not to get into great detail about this. I came in here to ask for your help. I came in here to ask you to help defend what we all know to be the facts of the world and to speak them from every steeple and every platform as well as every table, because we have to stop being a fact-free zone, which is what Administrator Lisa Jackson calls the Beltway, a big fact-free zone. We have to speak fact. We have to give people the information they need to understand the choices that are available to them so they can participate in democracy as it's supposed to happen. Okay, that's what we really need to do, and I need your help. Because EPA is not the enemy. EPA is not the enemy of workers who want to go to work in a safe place, and who want to go home to their families. EPA is not the enemy to children. We protect children from dangers associated with pollution. As EPA, we protect them from dirty water, we protect them from toxics in the land, we protect them from pollution in their air. Now, if that isn't enough, I don't know what is, because we are basic core services that you should expect the federal government to do for you, and then as states and local communities, you should do more. Because Gordon, you are absolutely right, and I was right then and I'm right now, all we can do is establish national standards. You have to figure out for your community how those national standards apply and where the loopholes are, where the gaps are, what your communities look like, what your sources of pollution look like, and you need to work really hard so that the fabric of protection is there to be able to allow people to breathe clean air, drink clean water, and have safe and healthy places to live. And we are not done yet. We have been very successful. But over 41 years, we haven't figured out how to do it all, and there is work to be done. But we have no plans to do that work in a way that's going to stop economic growth. Two different conversations, related, but two different goals. And the funny thing is that we are being told that if you move forward to protect the environment, you are by necessity slowing down the economy. That is simply not true. We have an environmental technology industry in this country that rivals the pharmaceutical industry. It's big. Why do you think it's big? We made it that way. We said you can't just pollute. You gotta actually take some of the profits and put controls on and make sure that you're not just providing good jobs, good products, but you're doing it in a way that people around you can continue to be healthy and lead productive lives. But who's saying that? I'll tell you who's saying that. The President of the United States, in his State of the Union, made it very, very clear that his intention wasn't to create jobs and grow the economy by dismantling the core environmental protections that that actually protect American families and we all expect the national government to provide. He is a staunch advocate of what we do. He is the one standing in between legislation that could take down the Environmental Protection Agency and protecting American families. Because what he has said is that you don't have to make false choices. You don't have to choose between the economy and the environment. Now, how many years, folks that have been in the environmental world, how many years do we have to keep saying that? How many years of proof do we need to bring to the table? How much data do we need to analyze at the national academies? How many years of data? You know how we get there? We get there because we challenge American ingenuity. We get there because when you challenge industry to be better than they actually respond in a very successful way. They build new types of equipment that they can sell. They make process changes. And when you're thinking about climate issues, man, they can get as efficient as anything if you challenge them to. And the issue is we need to do that. We keep having to rely on American ingenuity to get us where we need to go. Because as the president has made it very clear, it's not just about cleaning up electric generating units, which EPA is moving forward with, but it's making sure that we have a clean energy future. If we haven't figured out how to stay ahead of the game internationally, then it really won't matter what you're doing on your jobs programs. We will fall behind the rest of the world, and we simply can't afford to do that. Now, I would first and foremost tell you that people everywhere have a right to breathe clean air. I don't know if you agree with me, but I'm hoping that you do. They also have a right to a good job. They also have a right to farm. They have a right to sit with their family and have a healthy meal that's grown locally. I think that's one of the coolest things imaginable, right, JP? Woohoo! Yes? And really, what we really need to do is just remind people that they don't need to make these choices and that we really can have it all. And that is why EPA is moving forward. We're moving forward in a common sense way. We are not running amok. We are doing what the law says. We are doing what the science demands and tells us is the right thing. And we're doing it in a way that's cost effective and will help grow the economy. You know why? Because we know how. We've had 41 years of history. We haven't messed up that bad yet, right? I'm going to China next week. I'll come back and let you know what it's like if you decide that you don't need to have good environmental protection and that the only thing you think about is putting people back to work. I'll let you know whether that's a successful strategy, because I'm going to be there for a week talking to them about catching up on air pollution strategies that this country has been enormously successful in putting into place for decades, that they are just beginning to think about now. And I'm going to do that through the fog of Beijing. We're not going to be Beijing. We are going to demand that Beijing be like us, right? Not that they're doing anything wrong, not that I worry about them, but I'll tell you, we are spending a lot of time and money developing ingenious ways to lower pollution in a way that's cost effective. I do not want pollution from other countries that we need to be challenging ourselves to address. I want to start that discussion now. We want to build on that collaborative effort internationally. And we need to finish the job here and keep moving forward. There are two rules that I just want to make sure that I keep on your radar screen. The first rule, and much of what I've done, and I will tell you I'm a very busy person, much of what we've done in the air program has been a couple of things. One is we are looking at the Clean Air Act, and we know that 20, 30 years ago, things were supposed to happen that still haven't happened. We call that making up for lost time, and we're going to take care of some of those things because they're really big and very important for your health and the health of your children. Now, secondly, we are spending a great deal of time on do-overs. Now, I don't know if any of you golf, but if you do, I take mulligans all the time. The prior administration took mulligans. They hit a law out, and they hit it sideways, and it went to court, and it was found to be illegal. Now, I'm not suggesting it was designed to be illegal, but if they weren't, they were pretty lousy golfers because they made mistakes. They made fundamental mistakes in the rules that they produced, which bought a lot of time for pollution to be emitted that shouldn't still be being emitted. I'll point out two particular rules, and they both relate to the power sector, because I've mentioned to you before that we have a job to do and we're moving it forward. First of all, the Clean Air Act 20 years ago told EPA that you have to deal with some persnickety little issues like mercury. Anybody like mercury? Please don't put your hand up. Mercury is a neurotoxin. Despite what people in Congress may tell you, we pretty much know that it's not good for you. Would the academies agree? Thank you. We pretty much know that. But when we go to the Hill, we get said, well, mercury, really? Is that really a problem? Well, if you care about unborn children, it is. If you care about young children, oh, it is. Because it creates substantial health challenges for our children, not the least of which is lost IQs. We can't afford it. They can't afford it. We can get rid of it. The technology's there. The technology's been in place to reduce mercury for decades. But what never happened is that the largest source of mercury, the largest stationary source of sulfur dioxide, the largest stationary source of particulate matter, the largest stationary source of NOx emissions are called electric generating units, and we do not have national standards for toxic pollution for electric generating units. That's a disgrace. That was supposed to be done, we're getting it done. It's called the Mercury and Air Toxic Standard. It is going to be finalized in December, and it is going to create a level playing field so that clean energy gets to compete effectively in a market against energy that has so far been dirty but needs to clean up. Woo-hoo. Now, that doesn't mean that there'll be no coal in the future, frankly. There is a way in which you can clearly achieve these standards and still burn coal. You can do it. There are strategies involved. But what it will say is that if you have an old, small coal facility that's only competitive because you've never put on modern controls, and you're competing against all of those who have, and you're winning, that it's time for that to stop. It's time for there to be a level playing field and for you to own the costs associated with pollution, not American families. That's what it says. That's what it's going to do. The second rule is the mercury the cross-state air pollution rule. And this is actually one of my favorite rules, not only because it's incredibly complicated, which it is, but it's another one of those. This isn't a rule that we failed to do. This is a do-over rule. This is a rule that was implemented by the Bush administration in 2006, and it's specifically designed so that upwind states can't contribute pollution in downwind states that make it impossible for them to achieve air quality standards, even if they turn off all the lights in the entire state. Connecticut is one of them. Connecticut, even if it shut down tomorrow, it cannot achieve air quality standards for its citizens. And it would get really cold right now as well. Actually, they don't have much electricity in Connecticut right now. I should think about a different analogy. Which brings me to climate change. Oh, no, I shouldn't do that. So the cross-state air pollution rule basically is a very complicated rule that went so far as to look at 3,600 units that produce electricity. Those are big generators and boilers that produce electricity that are fired by fossil fuel, coal or oil, and we have 3,600 of them. And what it did was it established standards for reductions of NOx and SO2 pollution so that you would eliminate the contribution of those upwind states to those downwind receptors. And the health benefits of this rule will be felt in 2020, by more than 240 million people living in this country. They will be breathing cleaner air in 2012 as a result of this rule that we finalized. It is an enormous achievement. It's an enormous achievement because you can go on our website, you can click on Kentucky, and you can see just where your pollution goes and how many people whose health problems you contribute to. So shut your lights off once in a while. Stop driving your car so much. Be thoughtful of those people downwind, but it also will show you how cool it is that you can get the kind of reductions in your state that are being required to take care of the people downwind. You will get enormous health benefits every year because of this rule, in excess of 240 million just for Kentucky alone, in reduced impacts associated with public health. It is enormous. And it is a done deal. Is it being reconsidered by the Congress right now to potentially throw it out? Yes, it is. Will we win? If you do your job and I do mine, piece of cake. Piece of cake. But you need to do your job. Now, what's your job? You need to live healthy, live clean, be fair to everybody. Clean up after yourself, work well with others. I'm thinking about the back of my report card in grammar school now. Actually, what you really need to do is to just talk to people. Just give facts. You know, I will tell you that there are people that I work with who are very, very discouraged about what's going on in Washington. They get really angry because we spend so much time on the Hill at hearings talking about things like, are we beginning to create regulations on farm dust, which is a rumor that got started, and we keep saying no. But no matter what, they want to pass a rule about telling us to do something that we never intended to do, and we don't and won't. But that's okay. But the frustrating thing is they're not taking up things that are really important to the American people, as opposed to really looking at things that are working well, have worked well for 41 years, and are not their enemy. That we're not the enemy of the American people. We protect the American people. But what I will tell you is that as discouraged as they get and as difficult as it is for me to go to hearings every day, I am incredibly heartened and proud to be able to have the ability to do that. I am enormously proud to work for the President of the United States. I am enormously proud of the support that he has given to me and to the American people to stand up and say, you can pass those bills, but I'm not signing them. And he has said it time and time again. I would venture more than any other president has ever stood up. He's told them he's vetoing the cross-state air pollution rule if that goes to him as a Congressional Review Act issue. He has told them he is going to veto any challenge to the mercury and air toxic standard. He is standing up to be counted. And he's doing that because he knows how important it is, and he knows that EPA is not the job killer. EPA is not the problem with the economy. But I've been around here long enough to know, in my 57 years and 30-something of which has been in this business, that there are ebbs and flows in life, right? There are ebbs and flows. Part of the problem is every time the economy gets weak, the challenge on the environment always picks up, doesn't it? Always. And we are in a difficult time. And for those of you who really want to think about it, I don't want you to get discouraged by it. I don't think it's anything to be surprised by. We just need to speak clearly and factually. The American people will do what they always do. They'll work the democratic process, and they'll come out with the right decisions. I can't tell you how frustrating it is to go up time and time again to these hearings, but I will tell you that if you thought that we should be a government where I got to stand up and make a decision and thought that I rule the world, it's not the world we live in, and thank God we don't. The democracy is really hard. I have to prove that the science is right. I have to prove that I've thought about the costs and the job implications of my rule so that you know that I am not buying those public health protections at the risk of your job in your economy. I don't have to, I shouldn't want to, and I'm not going to, and I need to prove it. And I should be able to stand up at any hearing and defend that to the best of my ability, to the credibility of the United States government. I should be thankful that I have a process that demands nothing less. Because that's why EPA works. Because we're part of a government where democracy matters. But we're part of a government where people's participation is what's going to make it work. That is why EPA is at events like this. That is why we are working so hard on issues like community involvement, public participation, more transparent processes, environmental justice, to give every human being an equal voice. It cannot be the lobbyists who dictate what is fact and what is fiction. It needs to be you, your neighbors, your family, your communities, your state. They're the ones we need to hear from, and each of those begins with your voice. So I am here just to ask you to speak with your own voice about the truths you believe to be true, and we will do just fine. Thank you very much.